Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The Tale of the Headless Browser. Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Friday, April 17th, 2026, for day one of our technology article for the month of April. This is a two-day article, so you'll be with us today and tomorrow, we hope, to read about the latest developments in technology. We have a particularly interesting title this month, I think, Headless Browsing. Headless Browsing. And a intriguing deck to follow. What if someday there are no real humans using the internet? So I think we have a lot of food for thought today, and as always, we'll talk about the English as well, the vocabulary and the sentence structure and such, give you a chance to practice your English and grow confident. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist joining us for both days. Please welcome Simon. Hello, Simon.
Oh, thank you, Peter. It's good to be here.
Always good to have Simon with us. Simon, headless browsing, technology, so we are talking about technology today. Let me throw you kind of a broad question, and let me see how well you can answer it in a minute or so. What do you think the internet does best?
I'll give you a one-sentence answer. I have no idea. have no idea what it does best. There's, and I'll explain why in additional sentences. There are a lot of things going on with the internet that you do not see.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, you know, when you're talking about like people and thinking, we always think the part of our brains that, you know, sort of is coming up with ideas and stuff is sort of the most advanced, best part of our brain.
Hmm.
But as people age, it becomes very clear that actually we're not very good at remembering things properly. We come up with all kinds of like poorly developed ideas that we think are wonderful.
Hmm.
And so really the part of our brain that is running the most efficiently is sort of the lower brain, midbrain stuff that's kind of, you know, keeping your body's systems regulating.
Keeping the heart beating.
Your heart doesn't stop beating because you forget
to
tell it to beat, right?
Yeah.
So all of that lower order hidden stuff is actually running extraordinarily efficiently. And so my suspicion is that some of the things that are holding the internet together are really the real magic. So, I mean, I guess controlling the exchange of information. Would very broadly be what the internet does, right?
Controlling
Well,
the exchange
maybe not controlling,
right.
Facilitating, allowing for the smooth, remote, digital exchange of information. And it does that very, very well.
Yes. And I think I would agree with you, actually, personally, in terms of, and again, this is a broad question, and we're looking for a deliberately simple answer here. We could talk today and tomorrow about what the internet does best and why. But yeah, I think with regard to information, that to me is the chief value of the internet, that it's basically, and you know, to be clear, this is not obvious, this is obviously not the only thing that the internet can do, but I think it works best, I think its greatest value is in acting as a sort of digital library, where you can just go and get information about things.
Well, you even look at this title here, it's a good example.
Mm.
Because headless can mean all kinds of different things.
Yes.
Like, you know, in the Middle Ages, when somebody's head was cut off, they were headless.
They were literally headless.
When you have a company that's CEO has retired or been removed, the company is headless.
Right, the lack of a leader.
Yeah. But when it's not a person, so there's no one thinking and intentionally making choices, it's also headless. It's just an automated process.
Right.
So there's all
right.
kinds of different meanings there. Browsing could mean wandering through a department store, having a look at different things.
Right, right. Are you buying, sir? No, I'm just browsing.
Yeah, it could be checking through a newspaper to see if any of the articles catch your interest. So you know, even things like a browser where you get on the internet, the fact that you type in headless browsing and you get a list of articles that are even remotely related to the correct thing is an amazing thing. So the organization of that information, excellent. And that's kind of actually what we're talking about today.
Right? Yes, the way for the doing organization that. Of information, the access to that information, the storage of it, how money can be made off of these processes or by using these processes. Obviously, the internet also does entertainment. It connects human beings. And connecting human beings is one thing that a lot of people would say the internet does well, even though we may not always think of it like that, because sometimes, you know, we don't want to be connected with other human beings, or when they get connected, you know, the results are more frustrating than insightful or enjoyable. But that is something that we'll figure into our article today and tomorrow. So I'm glad to have you here to discuss this with us, Simon, and we're glad that you're here, listeners. Let's get right into our article now and begin with our first reading here again. This is the technology article starting on April 17th of your Advanced magazine. Let's go into our first reading now.
Headless browsing. What if someday there are no real humans using the internet? The rise of artificial intelligence in recent years, along with the surge in AI-generated online content, has given more credibility to a decades-old conspiracy theory known as the dead internet theory. It holds that most of the content we encounter online isn't actually produced by living humans, but by lifeless bots. AI is increasingly turning the once fringe theory into a reality, but even today, at least one of the participants, the living, breathing observer browsing the web on the other side of the screen, is still usually a real, sentient being. Yet this may not be true for much longer. Thanks to AI systems' increasing reliance on a technology known as headless browsing, artificial intelligence is becoming a primary consumer of the internet. And if that happens at scale, the internet will truly be a land of the unliving.
All right. So right out of the gate here at the top of our article, we have two ideas that are introduced just in that first line here. The first one is the rise of artificial intelligence. And we're all aware of that, the rise of AI in almost every aspect of our lives. And then with that, the surge and sort of following from that, the surge in AI-generated online content. A surge is an increase in something, particularly a sudden increase, like a wave might suddenly surge forward in the ocean or in the midst of a storm, a surge. And so this is a surge in AI-generated online content generated by AI, artificial intelligence. And Simon, together, these two things have done what, according to the rest of the line?
Well, they have promoted a conspiracy theory. Specifically here, they say they've given more credibility to it. So I guess the first part of that is a conspiracy theory, which a conspiracy basically implies that a group of people have a secret plan to do something. But it usually has kind of a negative association with it, like take over the government or take over the world. Or
you wouldn't say there was a conspiracy. We organized a conspiracy to give Bob a surprise birthday party.
Well, you might.
But but if you wanted to be you know, kind of
you'd
funny,
be saying it in kind of a joking way, because it has a negative meaning. That's right. So, you know, frequently conspiracies, I mean, obviously there are real conspiracies, but particularly within Western culture, maybe other cultures too, there's this whole thing about conspiracy theorists, people who have all kinds of ideas about conspiracies that may or may not be real. Like maybe part of it is real.
Yeah.
Maybe it's based on some real idea, but, you know, there are these very well-developed ideas that are mostly fictional. That's at least the idea. But here we see they are getting more credibility. Credible, when something is credible, it basically means you can trust it.
Right.
It can be believed.
Right.
And so more evidence to support these conspiracy theories. Now, in this case, they go on to mention in the sentence that this conspiracy is called the dead internet theory. And then they go on in the next sentence to explain what that actually is.
Right. And the dead internet theory is, it holds, the next sentence says, it holds, meaning it claims, it states, it holds that most of the content we encounter online isn't actually produced by living humans, but by lifeless bots. And bots, there's a real 21st century word, short form of robot, adopted in the age of the internet to mean content or interaction that is based on, or created by, or with a machine of some sort, a chatbot we often have to help you find your way through a particular website if the company has decided to provide one, a chatbot. But even any sort of bot is just that shorthand term for a machine that is creating or that you are interacting with rather than an actual human being.
You have to be a little careful, though, with the term when we use bot as opposed to robot or other types of bot.
Mm.
Because when we use the term robot, we're talking generally about a physical, mechanical thing.
Correct.
That is integrated with some sort of control system. So, you know, it doesn't have to be AI. It doesn't have to be, you know, for example, they have robots that don't look like people in factories that make cars.
Right.
And they just screw in screws.
Right,
over
exactly.
And over again, right?
Exactly. A robot isn't necessarily a machine-like humanoid.
That's right.
Figure with two arms and two legs and a head.
But in relation to the internet, when we talk about bots, we're frequently sort of talking about things like botnets, which are sort of networks of computers. So it's sort of a digital process that is doing things over and over again. And in this case, you know, it's doing things like generating content. So I assume most of our listeners are avid YouTube users. One of the things you'll have noticed lately on YouTube is quite long videos with content on a very diverse range of topics that are basically read by an AI voice and basically written by an AI. So it's like not human-generated content.
Right.
Though maybe a human is steering the generation, the editing, et cetera, but
right. Maybe they set it in motion.
So that's the sort of thing we're really talking about here. And the idea, like you said, is just that the vast majority of the things on the internet and the people using the internet are not real people.
Right. Which has given rise to this conspiracy theory known as the dead internet theory. And
dead because there's no living people.
Exactly. Dead internet. Right. The inhuman, the unliving internet theory. And it goes on then to say that in the next paragraph, AI is increasingly turning this once fringe theory into a reality. A fringe this or a fringe that means something that is less important or popular than a main group or a main example of something. You could talk about a Taylor Swift, a famous pop singer, and then we have less famous pop singers, and then we might have fringe pop singers who are on the very outer edges of people's awareness, of the artistic community, of the entertainment community. And this theory then was once fringe, but now it's becoming more mainstream. It's sort of slowly working its way into mainstream awareness and mainstream acceptance.
You know, that word originally comes from like a cloth that has an edge embroidered
On the edge.
And so the edge is a long way from the center where the main pattern would be, et cetera. So it's not really the focus.
Right.
Right?
Right,
and
exactly.
And so that's similar to what fringe theories are. They are things that are popular with people who aren't really in the middle of what's going on.
Yeah. No, it's a good word because the one thing the internet can do with its great reach through various aspects of human knowledge and information is make fringe ideas and movements can bring them to greater awareness instead of keeping them on the fringe. In days before the internet, when communication was not quite so quick and thorough and instantaneous.
Yeah.
But then it goes on to say another good word there in the second part of the sentence. This once fringe theory is becoming a reality. But even today, at least one of the participants in when you're using the internet, at least one of the participants on one side of the screen or the other is usually a real sentient being sentient, meaning able to experience things through your senses, which is one of the dividing points between a living creature and a machine, an inanimate object. It's not the only one, but that's how you'll hear the word sentient used.
It's interesting because we often use that word as a synonym, so a word with a very similar meaning to conscious.
Yes.
But they actually have different definitions. Like one relates to using your senses, the other one relates to awareness.
Yes, yes.
Of what is going on. But both, I guess, describe kind of unique characteristics of people as opposed to machines.
Machines,
at this point.
Right. Yeah. A sentient being would be, by definition, you'll hear it in science fiction sometimes, if we were to find a sentient race of beings that lived on another planet, they'll use the word sentient to distinguish them as living creatures, but not from Earth, not human beings. And then, though, the third paragraph in our section here, this introduces the disruption, the uncertainty. This may not be true for much longer. There may not always be a real sentient being on both sides of an internet interaction, and that's because of AI systems' increasing reliance on a technology known as, here's our title, headless browsing. And this means the artificial intelligence is becoming a primary consumer of the internet, and if that happens at scale, it goes on to say, meaning if it happens on a, you know, on a big enough level, often enough, the internet will truly be a land of the unliving. Another dramatic phrase that our author is using here. But let's go into our second section now and learn a bit more about what a browser is so that we can understand better what a headless browser is and why they're distinguished in that way. Let's go into our second reading now.
Traditional browsers. Nearly every web browser you've ever used, whether it's Google Chrome, Safari, or even Microsoft's old Internet Explorer, is a traditional visual browser. It features a graphical user interface, GUI, which includes buttons, tabs, scroll bars, and of course, a large window that displays content, i.e. a website, that you can see. You navigate a visual browser mainly by clicking with your mouse cursor on hyperlinks or other buttons on a web page. If the web page requires you to enter text, such as in a form, you click in the text entry field and use the keyboard to type your characters. The browser you can't see. But for decades, another kind of browser has existed. The headless browser. A headless browser has no GUI. It has no window that displays a web page and does not support pointing and clicking with a mouse cursor. Instead, a headless browser processes a website's content by reading its code directly. It interacts with the site, such as clicking on a link to go to the next page or entering text into a form, all through direct interaction with its code.
All right. So, first, traditional browsers, nearly every web browser, it begins here, every web browser you've ever used, Google Chrome, Safari, or Microsoft's Internet Explorer, that takes me back a couple decades, all these older traditional browsers are so-called visual browsers. You use them, you operate them mainly with your eyes, and they feature a graphical user interface, a GUI. Now, Simon, what are some examples of, or aspects of, a graphical user interface?
Peter, I just want to add that I'm personally, I don't know if I'm offended, but I'm a little put out that they didn't include Firefox among the browsers.
I know. Firefox always
gets
short.
You know, it's independent. It's not big tech.
Yeah,
I believe they need a little promotional shout out.
It's fringe, frankly, in terms of browsers.
But it's reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's private. Yes. Good job, Firefox. I'm going to add you to my list, even
quick
if the writer
Firefox
did not.
There. Yes.
Okay. So what is a visual browser? Well, basically, you mentioned that graphic user interface. It's sort of a piece of software that talks to the computer on a different level and then interacts with you in a way you can understand.
Right. So
there,
you can talk to
there may
computer.
Actually be levels under the levels in this case. But effectively, you know, like people generally cannot read computer programming language. Like, just look at it and know what is going on.
Right. Just looks like letters and numbers and these long strings. And,
that's right. Yeah. Well, and on an even deeper level, that computer programming language needs to talk to the computer using, like, ones and zeros.
Right.
Like binary, right?
Yeah.
So there's, like, software layers one on top of each other, translating things into the machinery here. And basically, this graphic user interface, exactly what it says. It's a bunch of graphics, so there's going to be colors and things you see.
Right,
visual. And it's for the user, and it allows the user to interface or connect with, control,
interact
manage,
with.
Yeah. Interact with the computer itself. And so then they list all of the things you would find in a graphic user interface. Buttons. These are not the buttons on your shirt, obviously. They're the buttons you click on. Tabs, you know, when you have, you're searching the internet, you have 100 tabs open on your computer.
All these right? different web pages that you want to go back to or, you know.
Scroll bars so you can move up and down on the web page. And of course, a large window that displays content. So this is, you know, from Windows.
Right. Yes.
You got the window. Exactly. So all of the things that you need. And of course, you can interact either through the mouse or through text by typing into a text box if necessary. You can sort of see how the text was the older one and then that was kind of replaced by the mouse. And very soon, or even if you're using your phone, you might be doing a lot of touching with your finger and voice to text rather than any of those inputs. So anything that lets you interact, that's basically what we're talking about.
Right.
That's your traditional browser.
And like Simon says, more and more these days we are touching the screen directly. That's another example of GUI, graphical user interface. But we are still, for the most part, I think, using the mouse and, of course, the little part, the sort of, you move the mouse on your desk or on your table, and on the screen, you see a little symbol, a little icon of some sort move across the screen. An arrow.
Or a finger.
Or a finger, right. And that's called the cursor. That's the English word for it, a cursor that moves, you know, it's your digital finger on the screen moving around to click on what you want to. And if the web page needs you to enter some text, then you click on the text field and you use the keyboard to type your characters. This is how graphical user interfaces work. But there is a browser that you can't see. And here's where we get into headless browsing.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is the drama.
This is it.
But it's interesting because I didn't realize it had been quite around, the technology had been around quite this long. But for decades, it says here, another kind of browser has existed, the headless browser. And Simon, how is the headless browser different from GUI?
I watched a video recently where somebody had two AIs talking to each other. So they'd sort of turned the computers on with the volume on and the microphones on, and they were talking to each other. And very quickly in the conversation between the two, something happened. Like, one realized the other was an AI. And they said, "Are you an AI?" "Oh, I'm also an AI." And then they switched into basically like a computer language where, I don't know if you remember the old, when you used to log on to the internet through the phone, there would be sort of this sound.
Right.
That's the language they switched into. And apparently it's much more efficient for computers to communicate because it's just simpler. Like there's less of these layers of software. And so when the AIs identified each other as being capable of understanding this simpler language, that's what they switched to. They actually said in English, "Do you want to switch to this language?" And then they did and continued their conversation. And I think that is effectively the same thing that's going on here.
Yeah.
So the computer knows it has this task to do, something involving browsing on the internet. And rather than troubling with all of your internet browser, with the graphic interface and moving the mouse around and all this other stuff, it's just simpler to interact directly with the web page through the coding.
Exactly.
And I think that's what the headless browsing is.
Yeah. In fact, it even sums it up in that last paragraph there. A headless browser processes a website's content by reading its code directly. Just what you were describing. Yeah.
So they use, for example, there they mention clicking on the link, but they put it in quotation marks because it's not actually clicking. Like, we have to click, use our finger.
Press the button on the mouse.
To click and push the button on the mouse.
Yeah.
But the computer just sort of says, like, open this link.
Yeah, yeah.
In its...
Here's my content. I'm filling it in just by communicating in the code machine language. Yeah. So that is effectively what headless browsing is and how it's different from traditional browsers. And that is as far as we will go today with the article. But again, we do have day two of the article we will explore more the implications of the rise of this headless browsing.
Yeah.
Remember, we learned that there has been, because of this surge in the use of AI and in content online that is generated by AI, headless browsing is moving from the fringes to a more mainstream phenomenon, and it is giving more fuel to this dead internet theory that we were talking about.
There are a lot of things that are unclear as of yet.
Yes.
We don't know why we have headless browsing.
Yes.
You know, because it's been around for a long time, they mentioned.
Yes, good point.
Obviously and not to build an AI-driven internet.
One would think.
Yeah.
One would think. So be sure to
we'll
come back
tomorrow
for day two, in which we will begin to address these questions, hopefully give you some answers, and as always, a chance to practice your English and grow in your confidence in English. But for today, I'm Peter.
And I'm Simon.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.